for Parshas Vayakel. We're turning to page 222. Vayakel Moshe es kol hadas b'nei Yisrael. Moshe gathers together the people of Israel. Vayomer aleihem Ela advar mesher tziva Hashem lasos osom. Please emphasize the word lasos. We'll come back to that in a second. Sheshes yomim te'ase milocha. Uvayom hashvi yilachem kodesh shabbos shabboson l'Hashem. Kol osev v'molocha yumas. Lo sevaru eish b'chol moshvosech miyom ha-shabbos. And then immediately afterwards, after this introduction about the significance of Shabbos, then comes the building of the Mishkan.
But what page are we on?
222. Okay. The beginning of Parshas Vayakel. And the Truma is collected, and Zohav, Kesef Nechoshes, Chelus V'Argoman, all the ingredients that go into the building of the Mishkan. Now, as far as the contiguity between the mitzvah of Shabbos, which comes first here in Vayakel, and the mitzvah of building the Mishkan, which comes second, right after Shabbos, Rashi points out in Pasuk Beis, Sheshes Yomim, Hikdim Lahem Azhar Shabbos. Why does Shabbos come first? Litzivui Melech Sam Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan comes second. Lomar, this is meant to teach us an important halacha, She'eino Doche Es HaShabbos. Shabbos comes first, it takes precedence. So if I were to tell you that I had a prophetic experience yesterday, and God came to tell me yesterday on Shabbos that we have to build the Migdash, would we build the Migdash yesterday? No, because it's Shabbos. And as great as...
tell you were a false prophet.
as great as the mitzvah of building the Mishkan is, nevertheless the mitzvah of Shabbos takes precedence. Now, we want to ask a number of questions here. The first question is that the Pasuk here, at the end of Pasuk Aleph, it says, Asher tziv Hashem lasos osam, as an introduction to Parshas Shabbos, is a little bit strange, because Parshas Shabbos, Sheshes Yomim, Tasam Lachav Yom HaShvi,
Tishbos,
correct, Shabbos Shabboson, there's no Asiya. So the word Asiya here
Is out of place,
correct. Now, the second question is more of a philosophical question. Why is it that the building of the Mishkan is not Doche Shabbos? In fact, I can prove to you that the mitzvah of Shabbos is even greater than the mitzvah of, that the mitzvah of Mishkan is even greater than the mitzvah of Shabbos. How do I prove that? The halacha is that for the sake of what goes on in the Beis HaMikdash, there's no Shabbos. That principle is called by Chazal Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. What is Ein Shvus B'Mikdash? Means there's one place, there's one location on the face of the globe where there is no Shabbos. And that's in the Mikdash. In fact, all the korbanos that have to be brought on Shabbos, the Pasuk says, Olas Shabbos b'Shabbato, have to be brought on Shabbos. Now, when you bring a korban on Shabbos, that entails a violation of many, many different melachos. And yet, we will override the Shabbos, put aside the Shabbos for the sake of the Avoda. And the building of the Mishkan is, of course, the precondition, the introduction to the Avoda. I mean, you don't have an Avoda unless you build a Mishkan. That Mishkan is what's called Kedushas Machitzos. There are walls that separate and single out a certain place. And that place is above the Shabbos. So when we set up that place where Ein Shfus B'Migdash, L'chora, we should be able to do so even on Shabbos. So why is it that for the sake of the building of the Mishkan, which is the greatest, the most majestic activity of Klal Yisrael, so much effort is put into it, and yet it doesn't override the Shabbos? The strange thing is, how do we know that every avodah in the Beis HaMikdash overrides the Shabbos? We really know it from this parsha itself, because Chazal in the Gemara Menachos Darshan, this pasuk Gimel, it says Lo sevaru eish bechol moshvoseichem v'yom haShabbos. We don't burn any fires bechol moshvoseichem. Kol moshvoseichem means anywhere where the Jewish people are settled or encamped. That's called Gvulin in the language of Shas. Bechol moshvoseichem lo sevaru eish. But the Gemara says b'migdash tevaru eish. In the Beis HaMikdash, we do burn a fire. So it's very odd. On the one hand, this is the parasha from which Rashi says we derive that the building of the Mishkan does not override the Shabbos, and yet all the laws of Shabbos are suspended in the Beis HaMikdash, and that we derive from this very parasha. It's a little bit paradoxical. Now, in addition to this, if you go back for a minute to Parashas Ki Tisa, I'll tell you exactly where we want to look in just a second. We'll take a look in Perek Lamed Aleph at the very beginning of this Perek. That's on page 211. So again, we're on page 222, but I want to show you something back in Parashas Ki Tisa. There you'll see that the sequence is just the reverse. That first the Torah speaks about the building of the Mishkan. Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe l'imar, Re'ei karasi v'shem, Betzal ben Uri ben Hur l'mata Yehuda, etc., etc. And then the Torah tells you what kelim have to be built for the Mishkan. That's in Pasuk Ches, in Pasuk Tes. And then if you turn to page 212, Pasuk Yud Gimel, we have Yatot Daber El Bnei Yisrael Leimar Ach Eshav Sosai Tishmoru. So the sequence here in Parshas Ki Tisa is exactly the reverse of the sequence here in Parshas Vayakel. In Parshas Vayakel, Rashi says Hikdim Lahem Azhor Shabbos, that Shabbos is placed first in the Parsha, and only afterwards the command to build the Mishkan, to tell you that Shabbos takes precedence. But if we look in Parshas Ki Tisa, the building of the Mishkan actually is before Shabbos. So what's the difference here between Parshas Vayakel and Parshas Ki Tisa? Now, when it comes to the question of Shabbos, we want to mention the following, that with regard to Shabbos, all of Klal Yisrael plays a major role. It's almost what I'd call a group effort. What leads me to such a strange conclusion that Shabbos is all of us together? On Shabbos, the Zohar says the secret of Shabbos is Raza di Echad. If any of you are familiar with Nusach Sfarad on Friday night, we read a piece in the Zohar, which is called Kigavna, if you ever heard of it. But anyway, it's all about Raza di Echad, that Shabbos contains the secret of oneness, of unity. The days of the week are called Yemei HaPirud, days of separation. Every single object, every entity is separate, is unto itself, is distinct. On Shabbos, it's all one. That's why the most central concept with regard to Shabbos is Shalom. Like we say Shabbat Shalom. Why do we say Shabbat Shalom? Because Shalom means when you take all the individuals and the pieces of the puzzle, and you join them together to form one entity. That's called shalom. One harmonious whole. And Shabbos represents, that's why we light Shabbos candles. What is the mitzvah of Shabbos candles? Shalom, shalom bayis. Right? When you have a room and it's in the dark, every single thing seems like a distinct entity. You walk into a table, into a chair, you don't see anything, it's dark. You turn on the light and you see that there's an organism here, there's a chair, there's a table, everything fits into a picture. That's called shalom. So that with regard to Shabbos, there's a concept called unity. Unity is the essence of Shabbos. Now what I have for you on the table, if you want to see inside, is a presentation of an essay about Shabbos in the Sefer Hema Yenachamuni. And if you'll take a look on page 198, in the second paragraph, he says the following, that this concept of Achdus, of the unity, that the people form one entity, is very critical with regard to the building of the Mishkan, the building of the Beis HaMikdash. At the beginning of Parshas Ki Tisa, we read about the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel. The Machzis HaShekel were used, the money was earmarked for the foundations of the Mishkan. And the law was, and the Torah formulates it back in Perek Lamed, that a rich person is not allowed to contribute more than a poor person. Everyone gives the exact same amount. And Hadal, even a poor person, it's very hard for him, but nevertheless, lo yam it, he should not give less than Machzis HaShekel. It means achdus. It means that we're all equal. We don't differentiate between the rich and the poor. Everybody contributes the same identical amount. We're all part of one entity, one endeavor to build the Beis HaMikdash. Now, once the Mikdash is built, and every member of Klal Yisrael did his due to participate and contribute to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, now, all of a sudden, once the Mikdash is built and we get to the next stage, which is the Avodah, all of a sudden, Klal Yisrael splits into various groups. There are Yisraelim, bless you. The Yisraelim are not allowed to enter into the Heichal, right? They're only allowed to be in the Azora. The Kohanim are allowed to enter into the Azora. And finally, the Kohen Gadol is allowed to enter into the Kodesh Kodoshim. The Levitim also have their role as a separate entity in the Avodah. So the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash, in contrast to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, splits up into
groups.
And Klal Yisrael is now made up of many distinct groups. In fact, even the Yisraelim themselves can be broken down into singular groups. Reuven has to bring a Korban Chatos, Shimon has to bring a Korban Ola, Levi has to bring a Korban Asham, all depending upon what they did in their lives, you know, if they violated this, if they violated that. So there's no longer that same kind of Achdus contributing, you know, where everyone contributes the exact same amount. So it means that we have here a distinction between the building of the Mishkan, or the building of the Beis HaMikdash on the one end, and what comes later, the Avodah. The first is Dal, Ashir, they all give exactly the same contribution. They're all part of this one joint effort. Each individual has to be counted. Last week we spoke about the counting of Bnei Yisrael. Every individual has to be counted. And every individual is giving the exact same amount. When we get to the Avodah, now it splits into many different permutations, into different groups and different divisions. Fine. Now, the Gemara says in Masechta Menachos, and this you'll see on the bottom right, going on to the top of page 199, that every karban has to be salted. And the Torah says at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, Mirtzim, we'll get to it in just 2 weeks' time, Al kar karbanecha takriv melach. And the Gemara in Masechta Menachos says that the word takriv is coming to tell you afilu b'shabbos, which means that after the shechita of the karban, the meat has to be salted in order to be brought on the mizbeach. And that happens even on Shabbos. So the Achronim want to know what violation is there in salting the meat. Now, the hides of an animal, if they're salted, that's called Meleches Ma'abed, which is one of the 39 Meleches. Like the tanners, when they make out of hides, they make leather and so forth and so on. Part of that process is to salt the hides. That's called ma'abed. Ma'abed is to smoothen.
To work them. Ma'abed.
Yeah, to smoothen. Right. Losha ma'abed. But when it comes to basar, the flesh itself, which has to be salted, that's not a malacha. So there are many different answers to this question. Today, what we want to do is, you know, that the Torah is divided up into what we call nigla and nistar. You know, there's the more
esoteric.
Right, well, that's the nistar. But the nigla is more the halachic approach. And it's based on law, which has to be understood rationally, categorized, defined. Then we have something called nistar. Today, we want to study this concept of melach, the significance of the salting of the meat from a Kabbalistic perspective. And it's all based on a Zohar. The Zohar at the beginning of Vayikra. Now this Zohar, which is quoted here in this essay, is the center of a presentation of two of the giants of Hasidus. I don't have to tell you that in Hasidus, the Kabbalah and the Zohar reigns supreme. And the Avnei Nezer was the Rebbe of Sokachov, the Sfas Emes was the Rebbe of Ger, and they both put a tremendous emphasis with that, with regard to this concept of salting the karmon on the Zohar. The Zohar says that when God created the world, He separated between the higher waters and the second waters that we know. So there was the Mayim in the Rakia, the Shamayim, and then there was the Mayim Ala Oretz and the seas, and the lower waters came in front of the Ribono Shel Olam. Again, what that means Kabbalistically is means their neshama or their sar, you know, the concept of, in Plato, this is the concept of the ideal, you know, the abstract. And they came in front of the Kisei Yaakov with the taina. They started crying. Makes sense that water should cry. And what were they crying about? You, God, yeah, you have taken the higher waters, and they're up there close to the Kisei Yaakov, and we're never down on the lowest spheres. And the language of the Zohar is very telling. The Zohar says, Anan, we, the lower waters, be'inon lemehevi kame malka. We would like to be in front of our king. That's the lashon of the Zohar. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by separating the higher waters from the lower waters, the tachtonim became what we call low kami malka. They're not in front of their king. And that was something that really bothered the lower waters. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them an answer. What was their answer? What was Hashem's answer? Hashem said in the Zohar, we're going to console you, the lower waters. Well, we're going to extract from the lower waters, from the seas, especially the Dead Sea, is the salt. And this salt is going to be used on a daily basis, twice a day, to salt the korbanos. And there are many other korbanos that are being brought, not just the tamid. And all these will require salt. and the salt will come from the water. And those karbanos will go up on high, so that you, or at least one element of the water, is connected always on a daily basis, on a continual basis, with Shamayim. Through what? Through the Melach. The Melach becomes that connector between the lower waters, through the karbanos, up on high. Now, every day of the week, they would bring the karbanos with the Melach. However, on Shabbos, there might be absolutely no need for Melach in the karbon. Again, this is before the drasha of Takriv Afilu B'Shabbos. Again, let's just reiterate our question. We want to know, what was the Hava Mina that you would not salt the meat on Shabbos? There's no Melach involved in salting meat on Shabbos. The answer is that if we understand the higher purpose and the goal of salting the karbanos, we'll understand why on Shabbos that goal is achieved even without salting karbanos. There's no need to salt the karbanos. Again, we're all trying to explain the Havamim. What happens on Shabbos? And why do the Mayim HaTachtonim have no claim against the Mayim that they're jealous of the Mayim Elyonim on Shabbos? Says the Zohar, the Bechina, the concept, the dimension of Shabbos is Echad, Raza de Echad. What does Raza de Echad mean? That everything goes back to its original source, to the original situation before Maisa Bereishis. Before Maisa Bereishis, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated the lower waters from the higher waters, everything in the universe was close to Hashem, was Kadma de Malka in that term. And therefore, there's no need to console the lower waters, because on Shabbos, insofar as the universe goes back to its original pure state of Kame Malka, of Chozrim El HaShoresh, therefore, there's no need for salt. The whole purpose of salting a karbon is to link up the Mayim HaTachtonim with the Mayim Elyonim, but there's no need to do so on Shabbos, because Shabbos, insofar as it's Hachzoras HaOlam HaBriya LeSharsha, all the waters are together in front of Hashem. And therefore, the Torah had to tell me that nevertheless, on a halachic basis, the karbon of Shabbos has the same requirement of the karbon of Chol, and as such, it requires Melach. So again, even though on a conceptual level, in terms of what we call the purpose of Melach, there was no need for Melach on Shabbos, but the other consideration is the legal consideration, and the legal status, al pi halacha, of karbon has to be one and the same during the week and on Shabbos. And therefore, on Shabbos, that's takriv afilu b'Shabbos. So at this point, now that we've presented two very mystical concepts, one is about Raza the Shabbos, the Shabbos is one, and the unity of the universe on Shabbos, and the second concept is that on Shabbos, everything in the Bria, everything in the created worlds goes back to its original Shoresh. Based on that, we're going to explain a few other things in Kabbalah. Again, today we're Kabbalists. Not that we know much about Kabbalah, but, it's a part of the Torah that we should sometimes get exposed to. And it may shed a light on the Pshat in the Pesukim. Binyamin is called Katnam Shal HaShvatim, which literally means the youngest of the Shvatim. However, the Medrash Rabbah says something unbelievable. What does it mean, Katnam Shal HaShvatim? In the Parash of Yosef, it says about Binyamin, and he's the youngest of the Shvatim. The Shoresh, it means that Binyamin, although he was born last, he is considered the root of all the Shvatim. Again, this is a medrash that's based on Kabbalah, that somehow, in a conceptual world, Binyamin contains within him the root of all of Klal Yisrael. That's something unique in the case of Binyamin. Why is it called Katan? Why is the pasuk describe Binyamin as Katan? Because if you take a look at a growth in the botanical universe, you'll always see that the root is the smallest, and from the root grows the bark, grow the leaves, and finally the fruits on the tree. In the case of a fruit tree, everything expands, but it all starts from one. It's sort of like in the world of physics, everything starts with the atom. And even the atom can be broken down into neutrons, electrons, protons. You know, you break it down into smaller parts. As soon as you get back to the shoresh, to the root, you're getting back to something that's small, that's compact. And then from the root, it spreads out and it grows. That's Binyamin. So Binyamin really means that what we're talking about is the shoresh. It's very small, and from the shoresh grows all the different parts until we finally get to the fruits. Everything goes back to the shoresh. In the shoresh, everything is one. When that one splits and divides, that's when we get the larger things, you know, the produce. But in its root, in its source, we're talking about one. So when we speak about God as being one, we're referring to God as the source of everything that's created. When we speak about Shabbos as going back to the situation before creation, we're going back to the one of the root or the source that later on will become the manifold as the universe evolves, as it's being created. And with that creation, we get these little, you know, from this little shoresh, this basic root, we get many different pratim rabim, many different larger expressions or revelations of that which is really only one in its source. And on Shabbos, we go back to the source. Basically, the word potential, which is a Greek word, comes from this philosophical idea of the source or the root. The word potential is a Greek word for understanding the nature of the root. What the root, the shoresh, has within it is what's going to come about later on. It's going to develop, but everything is there in potential. For example, every human being comes from Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon, the first man in that sense, is the shoresh. He's the one. He's called Adam HaRishon. He's Echad. Why is he Echad? Because every human being that will be born during the course of all of time is a development and an expression of that oneness of Adam HaRishon. And therefore Adam HaRishon has within him all of the many, many qualities that will make up millions and billions of human beings later on during thousands of years until Mashiach will come. And now we're on the top of page 200. God created the world during the 6 days of Masa. And what is the seventh day of Shvisa? What is that concept of Shvisa? Shvisa means, according to the Zohar, that everything goes back to the original creation. That's why on Shabbos, when we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shoves, the symbolic idea that's inherent, essential to Shabbos, is going back to that unity, which only during the Sheishes Yemei Masa becomes the Olam HaPirud, in which everything individually differentiates, but on Shabbos, it's all one. And that's called, in the language of the Zohar, Raza D'Echad, that Shabbos represents the Sod, the secret, the mystical concept of going back to the pre-creation state of oneness, of unity, of the shoresh, of the source. This is all from the Kabbalistic writings of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Soon we're going to see that one of the greatest Kabbalists, who is a Talmud, although he lived many, many years after Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, is the Arizal. He's going to tell us why on Shabbos and how on Shabbos we express this concept of going back to the original creation. But before we get to the Arizal, the Achronim want to know if you're allowed to say the word Shabbos in a washroom, because the law is that you're not allowed to mention the name of God in a washroom. So for example, if you wanted to say the word Shalom, which means unity, in a bathroom, you're not allowed to do so because that's the name of God. And some wanted to say that Shabbos, insofar as essentially it's the same idea of Shalom, it has the status of the name of God just like Shalom does. Again, I'm not posking for you. I think you're allowed to say Shabbos in a bathroom. But I'm just telling you that there were those who were very inhibited about saying the word Shabbos in a bathroom because Shabbos essentially is the same as Shalom. Shalom means oneness, and Shabbos means going back to the oneness. Now, if you go back to the beginning of our parsha, this week's parsha, the opening word in this parsha for Shabbos, to introduce the Shabbos, is Vayakel. And Vayakel Moshe's Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. It's very fascinating that Moshe gathers together the entire assembly of Israel in order to present to them the Shabbos. And that makes sense because what we said is that the Shabbos represents Shalom or oneness or Achdus. So the first thing that Moshe has to do is gather together the people for the sake of Achdus. We spoke about this on Purim where Esther says, Lech Knos is called you. In any way, the idea of Knisa, of Ayakel, is to create this oneness. And that is the essential introduction to Shabbos. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people of Israel, "Ele hadvarim asher tziva Hashem lasos osam." And we asked the question before, well, Shabbos is tishbo. Shabbos means refraining from work. So why use the word lasos, which implies an active verb with regard to Shabbos? And the answer is that the word lasos here doesn't refer to the Shabbos. The lasos refers to the vayakel. Vayakel means to gather together the people. The lasos here, the asiya, is gathering together the people. When it says Ela advarim, right, it says Ela advarim, meaning these things have to be said lasos after I do this asiya of gathering together the people. And that's called kulam yachad ke'ish echad. And of course that phrase is very familiar to all of us because it applies to Kabbalah HaTorah and Har Sinai. So there's a very interesting parallel here between the gathering together of the people ki'ish echad b'lev echad for the mitzvah of Shabbos and earlier the gathering together of the people for Kabbalah HaTorah. We'll see if we can maybe develop that. So in any event, Hashem commands the people of Israel that they have to be together with one unity. L'sachtus meaning the kinus, the gathering together has to be an asiya to make Klal Yisrael into a state of achdus. Now they're ready for the raza d'yechad. They're going back to their shoresh in which we are all one, we're all in one unity like the Shabbos, which means that the entire universe goes back to its original state of oneness. Now, if this be the case, perhaps we can understand why not to violate the Shabbos for the sake of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And he says the following. The building of the Beis HaMikdash has to be predicated on Achdus. Correct? On oneness. In fact, the Pasuk tells us at the end of Tanakh that when David HaMelech purchased a place, a piece of ground for the Beis HaMikdash, he bought it from Arona HaNivusi, he collected funds from all of Klal Yisrael. The Gemara says in Masechta Zvachim that each Shevet would contribute Chamishim Shkolim that was collected from Klal Yisrael, and then when they pulled together from 12 Shvatim, the 50 Shekel became 600 Shekel. Correct? And that was the Sach HaKol. David HaMelech had the money to purchase, according to the Chazal and Zvachim, this area for the Beis HaMikdash with his own funds. But no, he didn't want to do it from his own funds. He wanted to make sure that each Shevet would contribute to the purchase of this ground, of this land, for the Beis HaMikdash. Every Jew had to be part of this glorious creation of the Makom HaMikdash. And that's why we said at the outset last week that Machsa Shekel, everyone has to give the same exact Machsa Shekel to build the Adonim, and the foundations of the Beis HaMikdash. Everybody has to participate. No one is going to be a big shot, and no one is going to be so poor and give either more than Matzah Shekel or less. Binyan Beis HaMikdash has got to be the entire Tzibur. If this be the case, every Jew participates in the Binyan HaMikdash, is therefore Lo Yitochen Klal, we're on the top page 201, Livnos Es HaMikdash Toch Kidei Chilul Shabbos. Because the very moment that we violate the Shabbos in order to build the Mikdash, we are in a, shall we say, a situation, a state of being which is antithetical to Shabbos. Shabbos represents the absolute unity. Chil Shabbos means to undermine that unity. And since the building of the Beis HaMikdash has to come from Achdus, it's got to be the entire community as one building the Beis HaMikdash without any separation. Therefore, we have to reject any violation of the Shabbos. Because violating the Shabbos, undermining the Shabbos, antithetical to Achdus, would break up the possibility of building the Beis HaMikdash as one. But that's only in the first stage, the stage of building the Beis HaMikdash. Now we move on to the second stage, and that's the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Here, with regard to the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, the Avoda is related to every single individual Basher Usham. Reuven is going to dedicate his funds to this kind of a carbon, and Shimon to that kind of a carbon. Every carbon is different. Even a carbon tzibur breaks down into different characteristics. There's a quality of a carbon tzibur on the weekday, and it's different than a carbon tzibur on Shabbos. When the Beis HaMikdash is already built, now we've established the Achdus. We have the perfect oneness, because everybody, every Jew, participated in the buying of the land on which the Mikdash is built, and in the building of the Mishkan. Now we're ready for differentiation. Now we're ready for each individual to do it and contribute in his own unique way. We've got to start by going back to the root, to the Shoresh, that's Achdus. And now, once the Achdus is established, now we move on to the Prat, to the individual. Every individual has his own personality, his own character, his own quality, his own contribution to be made. And therefore, we can say that as far as Karbonos is concerned, we can be Docha Shabbos. Again, to build a Mishkan, which means establishing Achdus, that we can't violate the Shabbos, that would be antithetical to Achdus. But once the Mikdash has already established, and the Achdus is there, it's set in stone, now we get to the second stage, in which the individual has to shine forward with his unique contribution. And that's why, as we said last week, with regard to the Karbonos, once we establish that the Karbonos are being brought on behalf of Klal Yisrael, now the Kohanim do their particular Avoda, the Levim their Avoda, the Yisraelim theirs. Each one of those groups can now take from the Achdus and contribute to the Avoda of Klal Yisrael. The Achdus has already been established, it's already been set in stone. Now we're ready for each individual to make his, and each group, to make his or its contribution. And if this be the case, Rabosai, then we can now perhaps differentiate between Parshas Kitisa and Parshas Vayakev. Again, let's go over what we said at the outset. The sequence in Parshas Vayakev is Shabbos first and Mishkan second. The reverse is true back in Parashas Ki Tisa. There the Mishkan is first and Shabbos is second. Why is that so? And the answer is based on the Ramban. Now, this Ramban is even more Kabbalistic than everything we've said until now. But we can take one element from this Ramban. And the Ramban says that the difference between what we have back in Parshas Ki Tisa, what we have here in Parshas Vayakel, is the Egel Hazov. The Egel Hazov comes wedging in between. And he says the following, that back in Parshas Ki Tisa, when the Torah is addressing the situation of Klal Yisrael before the Chet HaEgel, as opposed to Parshas Vayakel, which is after the Chet HaEgel, again, this is all based on Kabbalah, perhaps we can understand something very fundamental about the difference between, difference in the sequence of Mishkan and Shabbos with regard to the two respective parashas. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says the following. When they built the Egel, and they said, El Elohecha Yisrael Asher Halucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, and Halucha is referring to the people of Israel, Lashon Rabim, what is the significance here of they brought you out of Mitzrayim? Now, as you know, the fundamental difference between belief in God and Avodah Zorah is that God is one, and Avodah Zorah is plurality, many different gods. So at this point, they were saying that there were many different gods that took us out of Mitzrayim. In truth, only one God took us out of Mitzrayim. What was their purpose, and what was their goal? Now again, you know, when it comes to Chet HaEgel, there are always very polar extreme views on how to attack the parsha of Chet HaEgel. You know, were the Jews extremely guilty and terrible, you know, catastrophic, and it was Avodah Zarah Mamish and so forth and so on. And on the other end of the spectrum, there are those who try to understand why they did such a thing. After all, they had just experienced all the great miracles, and they were very close to Hashem on a very high level. It wasn't long ago that they said and they declared Zeh Kehi Livi Anveihu. So we're going now with the second approach. That second approach tries to, in a sense, justify, and that's a bad word to use, but to minimize the Chet HaEgel. And it's all based on a Yalkut Shimoni in Parshas Ki Tisa. The Yalkut Shimoni says that Chet HaEgel is called Piruk Ol. Piruk Ol means when you have a yoke on your shoulders and you want to get rid of it. You know, something is weighing you down, a responsibility that you don't want to handle. You want freedom. You don't want the yoke on your back. What was the yoke on their back that they felt they wanted to cast off because it restricted them? And believe it or not, that was Emunah, the belief in one God. The belief in one God gathered together, unified the people of Israel in such a way that all of the Jewish people were, in a sense, anonymous. Anonymous meaning faceless. They all had the same face, let's put it that way. They were all dedicated to the exact same mitzvahs. It's almost like if you see school children that come from a parochial school. I don't know if this is true in England, I can't tell you. But I know in the United States, they all wear the exact same uniform. Is that true in England as well? Australia?
Americans,
South Africa?
Wear uniforms? That's
only in the parochial say. Schools. You know, I'm talking about the I'm talking about the Christian schools and so forth.
Yeah.
So there's something about, you know, faith in one God in this case that sometimes breaks down the individuality, because Emunah is a great unifying factor. Now, at this point in the history of Klal Yisrael, according to the Yalkut, what Klal Yisrael wanted to cast off from themselves is this Emunah in one God. Why? Because it, in a sense, quelches, is there such a word? To quelch?
Squelch.
Squelch. It squelches the individuality. If you and I have to believe in the same God, if we're all worshipping the same God, then there's nothing unique. I want to have my own God. That's Elu Elohecha Yisrael Asher Ha'alucha. As long as we all believe in the same identical one single God, we're all, in a sense, faceless, we're all anonymous, we're all the same. We all wear the same uniform. But Haim Ratzu, they wanted to get, what was their desire? They wanted to get to the point in which there would be self-expression. Every human being wants to express himself and his own uniqueness. They wanted to set up their God, each individual, respectively. I worship my God. My God is different than your God. and they sensed that as long as they were all unified together with one belief in one God, they lose their identity and their independence. That's what they want.
Distinctiveness,
excellent. They wanted to become Yichudi B'chol Prat. They wanted to be special. Now, when were they together? When did they accept and appreciate the Achdus? That was back at the time of Matan Torah. At the time of Matan Torah, before Moshe Rabbeinu went up for the 40 days to get the Luchos, they all declared Na'aseh V'Nishma, and Chazal said Vayichan Shom Ki Ish Echad V'Lev Echad. They felt that they had already achieved that level of Achdus. It was sort of like the building of the Beis HaMikdash, which was Achdus, you know, Dal, etc., Asher, and the whole thing. Now, we've achieved already the Vayichan, now we're ready for the next stage. Let each individual create for himself his own God. Now, 50 days had passed by from the time in which they left Mitzrayim until they declared Na'aseh V'Nishma. They had 50 days of preparation. And in an amazingly, relatively short period of time, their hachana, their preparation, had succeeded. They clinched and reached their objective. They were now ready for Vayichan, for Kelev Echad B'Ish Echad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very helpful, and with a great deal of siyata d'shmaya, they were able to accept the Torah. They reached, in a sense, the apex of Achdus, and they were ready for Kabbalas HaTorah. However, now that they had reached this maximum level of Kabbalas HaTorah, and they're already post-Matan Torah, at this point, they thought in their minds, they don't need all these, you know, to be surrounded and penned into one corral, onto fence, in order not to be separate. They felt, you know what? Give us a chance to express ourselves. Let us have our own Elohus, Harbe, meaning many gods. And that would allow us to emphasize that distinctiveness, that separation in Avodas Hashem. As we said before, just as when we build the Mishkan and the Migdash, we need Achdus, we need that everyone is be together. Then afterwards, when we get to the second stage of Avoda, having already set the Achdus into stone, we're ready to subdivide into different groups, and each group has its own unique contribution. And at this point, that's when they believed that that's what they can do. And that's going to be the difference here between Parshas Vayakel, which is the later Parsha of Li'achar Cheta Egel, and the Parsha that came before, the Parsha of Kitisa, which is before the Egel. In the Parsha of Kitisa, which is before the Egel, they had reached and achieved the level of Achdus, and therefore Shabbos comes first. I'm sorry. I just said the opposite. I'm talking about Kitisa, right? In Kitisa, it's the building of the Beis HaMikdash comes first, because the building of the Beis HaMikdash is an expression of Achdus. Now, they violate the Achdus, and they create a Pirud. They separate into different groups. Each one wants its own God, and that's the Chet HaEgel. Now in Parshas Vayakel, in that state of Pirud, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to tell them that no, Shabbos has to come first. What is Shabbos? Because Shabbos represents Achdus, as we said before. And we're not going to allow you to break up into smaller groups. We're not going to allow you to violate the Shabbos through Chilul Shabbos and undermine the Achdus of the building of the Mishkan. In the first case of Parshas Kitisa, there was no fear that breaking into groups would undermine the Achdus of Klal Yisrael, because they were on the state of Kabbalas HaTorah, they were on the situation of Ki Ish Echad V'Lev Echad. But now that they had violated the Egel and that it created a Pirud, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to make sure to guarantee that they do everything to create achdus, which means to observe the Shabbos together, rather than break down into small groups, which is represented by chilul Shabbos. And now, as I mentioned to you before, the Arizal has something to say about Shabbos based on his understanding of the Kabbalah. And that is that on Leil Shabbos we sing a Chakal Tapuchin Kadishin. Chakal is the Aramaic word for Sadeh. And tapuchim are, I guess, some sort of a fruit. We'll call it an apple. Kedoshim, that are very holy. What is this tapuchim, kedoshim, that we achieve on Leil Shabbos? We obtain that level of tapuchim kadishim. Okay. So in order to understand this, says the Ari, we have to read a statement of Rabbi Echama, which appears in the Gemara in Shabbos. And the Gemara says that the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim of Katapuach B'Yatzei Ayar is a mashal in which Klal Yisrael compared to the Tapuach. Why? Now the idea of Shabbos is the unity, and the idea of the Tapuach is also going to be a certain kind of unity. And as we enter to the Shabbos, we achieve that achdus, that unity that is symbolized by the tapuach, tapuchim, kedoshim. What's the relationship between tapuchim, kedoshim, and the achdus of Shabbos? So the Gemara says in the name of Rav Chama something very strange, which is almost incomprehensible. Lomar lecha, ma tapuach ze, pirio kodem li olav. Now, we know that everything that grows in the world of vegetation, the leaves grow first, and only at the end of the process, the fruit is created. The fruit grows on the tree. The exception to this rule is a tapuach, but that's not so. In any event, let's read the Gemara, and then we'll see how Tosfos says this Gemara makes no sense. The Gemara itself quotes Rabbi Chama saying that the tapuach is pirio kodem le'olav, that the fruit itself is produced on the tree before the leaves of the tree. And this is a mashal for Klal Yisrael. Why does the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim compare Klal Yisrael to the tapuach? Because ikdimu naseh v'nishma. We don't know what's going on over here in this Gemara. Tosfos himself doesn't know what's going on here. He says, the last time I checked a tapuach tree, I found that the pirio is not kodem le'olav. It's like every other tree, and it begins with the branches and the leaves, and then finally the fruit grows on the tree. So Tosfos says that maybe the Gemara has in mind not a tapuach, but an esrog. Okay, I don't know enough about. I know the esrogim in the Gemara are always considered very unique in the way they grow. But in any event, the Sifrei HaKodesh, which are the mystical works, they want to explain that the Cheta Egel was a repeat performance, Chazar HaTapuach Lios Kechol Shara Eitzim, in which the tapuach went back to being like all the other trees. That the apple tree became like any other tree. But before the Chet HaEgel, the apple tree had a very unique quality in which the fruit would grow even before the leaves. And now we're on the bottom of page 202, the paragraph that starts the Gemara. The Gemara says that at the time that Klal Yisrael recited or declared Nasa first and then Nishma, 60,000 Malachi Ashos came down from Shamayim, and each Jew received two crowns, one corresponding to Nasa and another corresponding to Nishma. After the Cheta Egel, 120,000 Malachi Chabola, those were the bad guys, they came down from Shemayim and they stripped Klal Yisrael of these crowns. words. So the Arizal, based on his Kabbalah, says that every Shabbos, when we enter into Shabbos, we receive, we are what is returned to us, those two ksarim. Mind-boggling. The two ksarim that we received, each Jew at Nasa and Nishma, which were taken away after the Chet HaEgel, are returned on Leil Shabbos. And therefore, we become, each and every one of us, this level of Tapuach, which again, if you want to know the history, the biological history of the Tapuach, you have to know that biologically there was one situation that existed before the Chet HaEgel, and a totally different one after Chet HaEgel. Before the Chet HaEgel, the Tapuach was produced, the fruit of the tree was produced even before the leaves. And that represents some sort of concept of Achdus, which we'll understand in just a minute, in Mirtz Hashem. And when Klal Yisrael said Nasa Menishma before the Chet HaEgel, they reached the level of this Achdus of the Tapuach. On Leil Shabbos, we become like this Tapuach, and we reach the level that we had before the Chet HaEgel, and therefore we have this Achdus that's represented by this strange phenomenon in nature of a Tapuach, which is Hikdim Pirio Li'Olam. Now, what is inherent in Hikdim Pirio Li'Olam? What's that about? And let's ask a biological question. As a general rule, the olim grow first, and then the pri. Why is that so? God instilled in nature that sequence is critical. The answer is that even though the pri, the fruit, is the ultimate goal and the purpose of this whole process, we plant this tzemach in order to produce the fruit, but nevertheless, the fruit needs protection. And the leaves protect the fruit. So therefore, there's going to be a separation in distance, a distance between the tree itself and the fruit. And what, in a sense, fills in that separation are the leaves. So then when the fruit is produced, the leaves sort of surround the fruit. He says, Hatamtzit shel ha'etz, hu zeh shenosein es kochos latzmiach es ha'pri. What's in the root of any vegetation is the capacity to produce a fruit. That potential really represents the essence of the vegetation. It's the fruit. When the fruit is at a distance from its source, it needs some sort of a medium, a go-between, that would, in a sense, take that power, that potential to produce a fruit, and develop it. So that's where the anofim, the branches and the leaves, play that role. They take the potential of the tree, and they connect that with the fruit itself, so the fruit now grows and is protected in the proper way. However, he says the following: Im haya pri tzomech yishirot al geza ha'etz. If theoretically the pri, the fruit itself, would grow directly out of the tree without any separation, any branches, any leaves, we wouldn't need any of those. Why? Because the pri itself would be close to its root, its source. It would nourish itself from the source, which is where the power to produce the fruit is inherent. And that's the situation before the Chet HaEgel. Before the Chet HaEgel, everything is close to its root. That's what we call Achdus. If you remember, we said that Achdus is when we go back to the root, to the source, where it's all one. And that's the situation of the Tapuach being so close to its root, to the Eitz, before the Chet HaEgel. Klal Yisrael at the time of Matan Torah were like the Tapuach before the Chet HaEgel, because when they recited Nasa Menishma, when they declared ki'ish echad v'lev echad, that we have achdus. At that very high level, they were really close to Hashem, close to the Shoresh. Because as we said before, in the Shoresh it's always unity. There's no differentiation. Oh. In that situation now of Klal Yisrael Kodem Hachet, when they achieve Vayichan, they didn't need any Olim. They didn't need any conduit that would help, that would connect the source with Klal Yisrael. They were connected directly to the source itself. They nourished in a sense like the Tapuach before the sin of the Chet HaEgel, directly from the Eitz. It's only after the Chet HaEgel, then Klal Yisrael were no longer like the Tapuach. They moved far away from the source, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Tapuach itself lost its very unique nature of Pirio Kodem Liolav, and now it would be Olim Kodem LePirio. On Shabbos itself, the entire Bria goes back to the situation of being close to the root before creation, right? That's the Vatishbos. Vatishbos means the Shvis of Shabbos represents the Rosa Diechod, the return back to the roots, closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now we can receive again the two Ksarim of Nasa V'Nishma. We can now nourish ourselves in Kedusha and Tara from the very source of Hashem, Hashem Echad. So Rabbosai, what we take out of this discussion here today is that Shabbos is really like Matan Torah. It's no coincidence that Shabbos was given on, that the Torah was given on Shabbos. Just like Shabbos represents that unbelievable level of coming back to the Shoresh, back to the source, ki ish echad b'lev echad, where there's no room for pirud and differentiation, so too Klal Yisrael on Shabbos, because Shabbos is an expression of that element, that variable, or that dimension of chazor l'shoresh, chazor l'bria, kodem abria, that oneness and that unity, that's the Roz of the Shabbos. And that's why he says the Arizal on Leil Shabbos, we can declare, as Rav Chama said it in Masechta Shabbos, that we have reached this level of Tapuach. Which Tapuach? The Tapuach of Kodem Chet HaEgel. The Tapuach of Hikdimu Nasa V'Nishma. Klal Yisrael become once again like that level that they achieved at the time of Vayichan, at the time of Matan Torah. That's what they achieve on Shabbos, and therefore they become the Tapuach, where the Shoresh and the Pri are very close to each other. And Emir Hashem, once we achieve that level of closest to Hashem, of going back to the creation as it were before creation, that Achdus, then we're ready for the Avoda of differentiation, the Avoda in which each individual makes his own contribution. So Yiratzon may be his will, that we understand the Torah and appreciate it, understand the Shabbos and experience the Shabbos, and achieve all these levels of Klal Yisrael at the time, Kodem Achet of Nasa V'Nishma.
Okay. Two questions on that.